Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I am Rob Pannier, once again joined by my good buddy Kevin Lucco from the 10th Inning Stretch. And Kevin, you're getting a little trip to Milwaukee to check out that new routine field.
Yeah, I'm doing this, my part of the show. I'm from the Four Points Hilton, the official visiting team hotel in Milwaukee. But yeah, last night was my first visit to the newest park in the league, routine field. So it was a decent little ballpark. They still have a lot of work to do around the ballpark itself. There were construction workers working as I was pulling in last night, but I think when the area gets developed around it, the place will have a pretty good vibe to it.
We're actually doing our show in the late morning today, so does that mean we'll be more alert and have better information, do you think, or we're not awake enough yet, and so this could be even worse than normal?
I've always said I'm not a morning person. That's why I like to work during the day, because I'm not wasting my good hours of the day working.
Well, let's see if that pays off with that reasoning. Let's jump into American League action. American Association action, and we begin with the player and pitcher of the week. Player of the week is Tyler Hill from Winnipeg. Yeah, I don't really think there's enough that can be said about the job that this young man has done since getting signed. Not only does he push out an MVP from the team, but he has just put up big numbers week after week, hitting over .500 last week, and has really been a huge addition for manager Rick Forney.
Yeah, he's been a key to that offense ever since his arrival in Winnipeg. I think if he was in a lot of other teams in this league, he would probably be getting signed by at this point. But, I mean, we all know what happens. That Winnipeg isn't, for some reason, guys don't leave Winnipeg too freely. So, looks like Tyler Hill's there for the rest of the season, and good news for Gold Ice fans with that. So, he's the one that kind of caused the logjam in the outfield that eventually led to Josh Romanski moving on.
I do got to ask, Kevin, are you saying that it's the Hotel Manitoba there? Is that what you're trying to tell us? Or,
yeah. I see where you're going out there. You can check all the time you want, but you can never leave.
That's right. So maybe that's the instance. Michael Tamburino from Fargo-Moorhead is named as the pitch of the week. You know, I've been impressed with this man because last season he had such a good start with Lincoln and looked like he kind of wore down at the end of last year. But this season it looks like he is getting stronger as the season has gone along and has really given Fargo a big boost to their rotation.
Yeah, he's been a key part of it. I believe he missed a little bit of time with injury. But, yeah, I think he nailed it just right last year. He was as hot as he could be. Couple months into the season, man, he wore down by the time he even arrived in Fargo in a trade with Lincoln. But this year, yeah, he's been a steady presence in a really good Red Hawks rotation.
Well, yesterday was the trade deadline for trading a player away from your team and being able to receive him back at the end of the season. There were a number of big names out there, especially in the starting pitching staff. And with four teams kind of out of the race, I think it wasn't, it was kind of expected that there would be some of those starters that'd be moved, but it doesn't look like any move was made, Kevin.
No, all was quiet on the transaction front other than some stuff that we'll cover as we're going through the teams, but no, there wasn't any of the vintage trade guys back for the same guys type of trades. So we'll see now what happens with the final trade deadline that comes 10 days before the end of the season.
I think is August 20th this season or something, pretty close to that. So,
can I get in my soapbox with that right now?
Absolutely. Lay it on us.
Okay, we were talking about this at the All-Star break. I don't think we covered this last week, but the trade deadline is 10 days before the end of the season. So if you trade for a starting pitcher and his on the rotation just happens to line up perfect, you're probably getting two starts, maybe a third out of them. Does that seem to be not much bang for the buck, considering starting pitching in this league is going to cost you a pretty good ransom?
unless you're making the playoffs, that's a kind of a wasted cost.
Right. So let's kind of compare. MLB's trade deadline is July 31st, where you've got 2 months of the season left, at like one third of the year. If MLB, if their trade deadline was at the same time that it was for the American Association, it would be in the middle of September. I just think in comparison, it just seems kind of asinine, and I think the trade deadline should be bumped up to, well, right around now, I would say.
I think you're making a good point, and if you want to get the most bang for your buck, I guess you could make deals on your own prior to the deadline. You don't need to have the deadline as an incentive for you, but a lot of teams would be, if I'm a seller, let's say I'm a Milwaukee at this point, and I have three quality starters out there, I'm going to hang on to my guys for a little while, hoping that the pot gets bigger. So maybe a Chicago is willing to deal two guys now that are okay, but a week from now, Winnipeg is willing to give me something really big, and I'll take that. Or August 19th or something, they'll give me something big. So I think when you put a deadline that's a lot sooner, you make it so that teams are going to have to start ponying up some good prospects at that point early on, and I think it would make those teams greatly improved. I agree with you. I think your thought on that is right on.
Well, I think it makes teams too have to make a call earlier. Hey, are we contending or are we not? Instead of just hanging on to guys and leaving them playing for nothing, let's let the guys that are having good seasons on teams that are not doing so well, let's try to get more of them moved so they get a chance to play for a championship ring. Because let's face it, other than getting back into an organization, the thing to play for in this league is a championship.
Well, if you think about it, it was last year that they changed the deadline for when a player could be sent back. Was that right? It was up to the trade deadline at 10 days before the
Right.
season. Okay, so somebody recognized that this deadline didn't work somehow or another. And so it made sense to push it back in terms of getting your guy back. Well, if you're already looking at it from that way, why not move the entire deadline back? And I mean, there are still alternatives for a team to find a guy. So if I lose my starting pitcher, if the deadline, let's say, is August 1st, let's just say that's it. That's your trade deadline in the American Association. If I lose a guy August 10th, I still have options to go find somebody. But I think it says to teams, hey, if you're not in the race in August 1st, you better start making moves if you're going to make them. Otherwise, you're all in one way or the other. And I think that's a good idea. We should push for that. Let's push for it, Kevin.
Well, I do see the con side of it too, where if the deadline is earlier, and let's say you have a pitcher or two go down in right around the first of the month, the deadline comes up, and then you're hoping there's somebody sitting at home waiting to get a phone call. So, there are pros and cons to it, but and maybe a compromise, maybe you move the deadline up like another week. So
I think that
that's
there
something
are,
for the big shots to figure out.
and I think there is some room to look at some positive change like that, especially considering that now, 2 years ago, the Mexican leagues kind of ended August 4th or somewhere. I mean, yeah, somewhere right around there. So guys could get back, get another guy or two back from Mexico. And ride that out for the last month of the season. But since they've changed their scheduling structure, now that isn't even available to you. So I think you make the trade deadline even more exciting if it's August 10th and say, this is it. You got 3 weeks are going to be left in the season, or 3.5 weeks or something. So you better start making your decisions now, because a lot of the sources of where you would have gotten players before aren't going to be available to you anymore. So that's a good idea, Kevin. I'm with you. We'll start a petition. All Well, let's jump into going around the league there, and we start with the St. Paul Saints. Last week we talked a little bit about some of the concerns of Eddie Medina and him walking some guys, and whether this was going to, you know, it was issues with his elbow. But boy, he sure has looked great in his last couple of starts. One was a short one because of rain, but looks like we're seeing the vintage Eddie Medina at this point.
Right, last night not many Saints pitchers have gotten since the All-Star break, which was run support, as the Saints jumped off to a early lead, spotting them 4 runs to work with by the third inning. But Medina, he was on cruise control. He won 7 innings, only walked 3 guys, gave up only 4 hits to Milwaukee, and struck out 8. So, and considering how much the bullpen's been used lately, that was badly needed, as Ryan Schlosser, who got signed for, I think, the 20th time this year, came in and ate up the last 2 innings, giving up a run. But they accomplished 2 things, got the Saints a win, and got the bullpen some badly needed rest.
Speaking of that bullpen, the Saints have been suffering some big losses of late. Ryan Smith goes down and went on the inactive list, and closer Todd Van Steesel is going to be out for a little bit. Jordan Jess having to move into the starting rotation with a 4-0 record and a 2.43 ERA. They're going to need Medina and some of these other guys to step up and put up some big, big innings, you know, at least 6 or 7 most nights, because this bullpen could get taxed really early and really quickly here.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some nights where the guys don't have the best stuff and they get hit hard early. They may have to, as they say, go wear one. But, yeah, starting pitching is going to be key. And I got a feeling that as soon as Jake Mathis is allowed to be re-signed again, that they will add Mathis to the fold so he can come in and eat up some innings too. So, you know, George Samus, he's been through this before. I'm sure he'll know how to deal with the delicate balance of trying to not wear out your bullpen, but yet have them ready for when needed.
Well, I think the biggest news around the Saints this week, a couple of weeks ago, we were kind of like, wow, Josh Romanski is a St. Paul Saint, and that was like something I guess neither one of us ever expected to see. Now Michael Lang joining the St. Paul Saints. Romanski out because there's just not a roster spot for him right now. But Michael Lang broke the hearts of the Saints in 2015, and now here he is playing for St. Paul. The world's kind of gone crazy, I'm thinking, Kevin.
Right. The people that really follow the Saints on the baseball end of it will remember Game 4 of the divisional series in 2015, where Michael Lang threw out Nate Hansen with just a perfect throw to home plate to help preserve a Sioux City lead, and Sioux City ended up winning the game and the series that night. So, you know, as I was watching Michael Lang take right field at CHS Field, I kept kind of getting flashbacks of that particular play.
Huge addition for
St. Paul. Hansen was ridiculously slow for a guy his size.
Huge addition, though, in Michael Lang, because this guy can do just about anything for you. And I'm thinking, you know, that was one of the shrewdest moves that I think I've seen George Samus make in a long time.
Yeah, shrewd, and kind of surprising that he was even on the market. But boy, the addition of him, you got your top 3 now is Dan Moeldel, Michael Lang, and Brady Shoemaker. I'll put that up against anybody in the league.
Absolutely. An interesting note is that Sean Aronson just reported about an hour ago here for St. Paul is that Max Murphy moves up to AAA and homered right off the bat. So congratulations to Max Murphy.
Yeah, Murphy showing what he learned in St. Paul, that power to right field is not a bad thing. And I guess the ballpark arena, the ball travels really well to right field. So that was Murphy's first AAA homer. It was a shot into the right field bullpen.
We move on to the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, who lose 2 games against Winnipeg, then rebound to take 2 from Chicago, hanging on to a half-game lead in the North Division right now. It's been a lot of great things going on around Fargo of late, but one thing we really wanted to recognize right now is Leobaldo Pena on a 36-game streak of reaching base, on-base streak, so in the last 36 games. So that's quite a run to know that you're always going to have a guy on base at some point during the game.
Ryan Pina kind of gets buried in that Red Hawks order when you got guys like Metzger, Colwell, Prime, and Jacobs. But and a lot of times he's sitting a little lower in that order too, but he's in the lineup every day, and obviously he's, by his streak, he's constantly contributing.
The team, though, is playing exceptional baseball right now. It's suffered the three losses against St. Paul right before the break, and then lost two to Winnipeg. But, boy, look like they have gotten things back on track. I understand it's just two games against Chicago, but that's one of the better teams in the league, and you kind of make a statement taking two big games right off the bat against them.
Yeah, that was a big matchup I thought going into the week was Chicago and Fargo-Moorhead, and that'd be a combination of both. Fargo's on a roll, and it seems like the Dogs are starting to wilt a little bit. Granted, the Dogs also had to play the 27 Yankees, Cleburne, over the weekend. I don't think that bet carries into every week, does it?
No. I didn't hear it that way. So I think that you don't have to continue that train of thought from this point.
Now it's just kind of got ingrained in my head when I think Cleburne, I think 27 Yankees.
Kind of a big news story around Fargo that we thought was kind of fun was that Michael Hope, pitcher for them, comes out and blasts a homer, has four RBI and six at-bats for them. So good job for you, Michael, out there.
Yeah, it was necessitated. Daniel Comstock wasn't ready to come back from injury yet, and their other catcher got hurt in a game in Lincoln, which necessitated T.J. Bennett coming in from second base to catch, which created a whole bunch of other defensive maneuvers and left Hope playing right field. You know you're having a good year when even your bullpen's hitting homers.
That's the truth. Well, the second hottest team in American Association right now and the hottest in the North is the Winnipeg Goldeyes, who tipped two from Fargo-Moorhead. Did see their seven-game winning streak snap, but have won eight of their last nine games. The pitching staff has just been awesome right now in Winnipeg, Kevin, with a 1.87 ERA in their last seven games, a 2.56 opponent slugging percentage. That's just ridiculous to me in those seven games. We were kind of looking at whether this team was on the verge of being out of the race, and all of a sudden, they look like the team that could be making a serious run to grabbing the division title.
That just kind of sounds funny. You think Forney went into that little staff meeting with the pitchers and said, look, guys, if we can get the opponent's slugging percentage down to 258, I think we got a fighter's chance in this. Yeah, it just doesn't sound natural. But, yeah, you look at their line of work. They took two from a Fair Midland, Kansas City team. They were supposed to do against Texas and swept all three, but then they had the two big wins over the weekend against Fargo and had a little bit of a roadblock on Tuesday against Gary, but got back on track yesterday. So we were talking about it being a three-way race with St. Paul, Fargo, Chicago, but Winnipeg has crept right back into it, and I believe they did leapfrog Chicago, didn't they?
Yes, so 2.5 out now. Chicago 3 out. So yeah, they are the third place team. Actually, I'm going to rephrase that: 3.5 out and 4 out for Chicago. So they are the third place team in the North right now. A move that I thought was kind of a bit of a surprise to be honest with you, Kevin, was the return of Cameron McVeigh, because he had been so brilliant in Lincoln a couple of seasons ago and then really did not pitch particularly well in Winnipeg last year, dealt back to Lincoln, comes back to Winnipeg, though, so must have some kind of interesting frequent flyer miles between the two cities. But I guess Rick Forney is thinking that whatever was wrong last season could be fixed this year or has been fixed, and that he should be a huge addition for their bullpen.
Yeah, well, as we've seen through the league this year, too, that before we were, I think last year's story was the starting pitching was weak, but everybody had a really good bullpen. Well, now it's spread now where starting pitching's at a premium, and even good bullpen guys are at a premium. So I think maybe Forney's kind of looking at it like, well, let's see if we can find something in him. So it was kind of one of those low cost, high reward type of deals.
We also wanted to mention, I did forget to talk about this last week, but Wes Darvill playing for Team Canada in the Pan Am Games. So hope he's having a good time down there and performing well for his country. We move on to Chicago, where David Almeida Barrera's hit streak ends at 25 games, but Keon Barnum, who's a legitimate MVP candidate this season, hits his 20th home run of the season. Boy, I'm gonna be truthful, Kevin. I didn't really know much about Barnum before the season began, but he sure introduced himself to me now.
Yeah, he's quite a menacing presence at the plate, that's for sure. He was one of the guys that stood out to me at the home run hitting contest. And boy, I know Brady Shoemaker won it, but Barnum, wow, a couple he drilled out of the park. It looked like the ball literally went into orbit. By the time it left the park, you couldn't even see where the ball was anymore. It was that impressive.
Well, Chicago in a bit of a slump right now, Kevin, and it starts with a pitching staff that is struggling. Over the last seven games, they're at a 7.35 ERA. Even former major leaguer Carlos Zambrano is not really performing particularly well right now, and you're beginning to wonder if Butch Hobson is losing some confidence in his bullpen in particular. Even Luke Westfall got hammered last night. Is the bullpen really just kind of worn down at this point, or is just kind of a hot point in the summer? What do you think Butch Hobson's thinking at this point?
Well, I think both teams in baseball, there's always seems to be a little part of the season where they hit the wall and guys just go into a collective slump for a couple of weeks, and maybe that's the deal right now with the Chicago bullpen. But there's still talent there, so I wouldn't count out their ability to turn it around.
Well, we talked about 2 weeks ago, I believe it was, that they had a real shot because of they had, I think, six or seven games against Gary. They took advantage of those and really got themselves into the division race with, I think they took five of those six games, maybe even six of the seven. I have six of the seven because they had a doubleheader to play as well. But now they're back into the heart of this division playing right now, and I wonder if they were, you know, beating the softball teams, and no offense to Gary and in this way, but now they're facing the big boys, and I wonder if this team has what it takes to be able to compete against that level, against a hot Winnipeg, a Fargo-Moorhead team that on paper could be the best team in the league, and a St. Paul Saints.
It's funny you make that analogy, because we were just talking the other day in the press box in St. Paul that Fargo's uniform makes them look like a softball team. Ever watching Butch Hobson walk off the mound after a conference with his pitcher, I just said, you know, Hobson kind of looks like the 60-some-year-old beer league softball player that just doesn't want to give up playing, that he plays and then between innings smokes his marbles behind the bench. It's just not a classic baseball uniform that those guys wear.
You didn't hear that from me, Butch. I just want to point that out. So that was Kevin Lucco.
I will not be in town in Chicago. So.
We move on to the South.
So don't go looking for me.
We move on to the South, where the Cleveland Railroaders are still hanging on to first place there in the South Division on a 7-3 run in their last 10 games. But, boy, they sure made a nice move when Angel Reyes returned to, we'll call it, Wichita South, I guess, at this point, is playing exceptionally well for them. Three homers in the six games that he's had since becoming a Cleveland Railroader. And that was a huge addition right now that has really made this an even more formidable lineup.
Oh, you are mistaken, Rob. You cannot call it Wichita South, because I was told by Brett Allred there are more former Railroaders on the roster right now than there is, or more guys left over from the Railroaders than there is from Wichita on the roster right now.
Well, that may be true, but the guy running the show down there makes it Wichita South in some ways, and everybody kind of looks at it that way. So, offense to Cleburne, but what can you say? Is there cause for concern, though?
You mean the Las Vegas of Texas.
Exactly. You know, Kevin, though, I look at this team, and as well as they're playing right now, Closer Tyler Wilson was just untouchable for the longest time. And heading into the All-Star break, he'd been scored upon a little bit, then got hit in the All-Star break, and has given up four runs in his last, like, three or four innings right now. It doesn't look like he's been used too much. I think he only has 23 or 24 appearances at this point. But, if I'm Cleveland, I'm a little concerned about the back end of my bullpen right now.
Yeah, it seemed like his problem in the All-Star game was the walks. And that's where he got into trouble. Looking in the All-Star game, one third of an inning, yeah, a couple hits too, or just one hit, but walked three guys. And situation like that in an All-Star game, you don't know if he's trying harder to hit batters out or pop the radar gun. But he had a successful, a save against St. Paul where he did let a couple guys on base, but got out of it with a couple strikeouts. But yeah, against Chicago, it wasn't pretty. One and third innings, four runs, three hits, two walks. So, the closers are allowed to their hiccups here and there. So, with a 1.88 ERA, he was one of the guys that was a holdover from Cleburne last year. But, he's allowed the occasional hiccup, so we'll see how he bounces back in his next save opportunity.
We move to the Sioux City Explorers, who are winners of 12 straight games right now. That's the longest winning streak in the American Association this season. But Kevin, you and I were talking a little bit before the show about the fact of maybe this isn't as impressive of a win streak as you would think.
The competition level was not the American Association elite, but you still got to go and win the games. And we've seen what happens in the league when you take a team too lightly, but Montgomery's got his troops pretty focused right now from what it looks like.
The nice thing for them is that they have a chance to really extend this winning streak because the level of competition, and again, everybody's got good players. They're all professionals out there, but you're looking
at... No, Dan says they all got uniforms.
That's right, but they got one game left with Lincoln and then three against Texas. They have a legitimate chance of reaching 16 before St. Paul comes to town.
And maybe that was the issue early in the season, too, where the schedule somewhat balances out, where maybe Sioux City was playing all the tough teams early on, and maybe that's why the record wasn't where it should be. But they're making hay where it matters for right now.
They got some big games coming up, though, with St. Paul coming into town for three and Cleburne coming into town for three right after that. So we're going to see.
Yeah, that'll be that Cleburne series will be a telltale sign of where they're at. If the Explorers are for real, or they've just been beaten up on the lower rung of the association.
We also want to comment on Ryan Court, former Sioux City Explorer in the Seattle Mariners organization that made his major league debut last week. We had a big 2-for-5 day against Detroit with three RBIs. So that was pretty impressive for Ryan Court, and congratulations to him.
Yeah, I know he kind of bounced around a little bit. I know he had a full season in the Cubs organization playing AAA, and you started wondering if he was going to be just like a lifetime minor leaguer, but it's good to see him get a shot with the Mariners.
Heading on to the Kansas City T-Bones, the biggest news, probably the biggest news in the league this week, was Joe Calfapietra reaching his 1,000th victory as a manager, joining his good buddy George Samus, who had it reached that point last season. I think that is the sixth manager in independent history that reached 1,000 victories. So congratulations to Joe.
Yeah, I was there for his 1,000th victory. It was a completion of the rain-suspended game from Sunday. Dylan Tice had a big game with two home runs to lead the T-Bones to a 5-2, 5-3 victory after they had been down 2-0 going into the completion of the suspended game. But, yeah, I got to witness Dan Vaughn somehow stayed on the air on his MixLR account, got down and did get a chance to interview Joe after his 1,000th win. And you could just tell the emotions with Joe as he was talking to Dan how much getting that 1,000th victory meant to him. So it was a pretty touchy moment, and of course our buddies at Catcher Twin Cities worked with us and the T-Bones to get plenty of good foals for the folks back home in Kansas City.
The one thing I thought was kind of disappointing, and there's really nothing he could do about it because the game was suspended, was the fact that he really couldn't bask in the enjoyment of that 1,000th victory because he had to go manage the back end of that doubleheader. I feel bad for him in that way, is because you would think that you'd like to have a night to really kind of celebrate and enjoy that, and then you just don't get to. And the game started really late, too.
Right. Yeah, and I guess his family was in for Saturday and Sunday, but then had to leave before the game on Monday, so they weren't able to be there live for it either. But, you know, we asked Joe Calfapeach, or they'll celebrate for a little bit, then it's right back to business. I don't think he'd have it any other way.
You are right there. Kansas City
loses. Nice acknowledgement by the St. Paul Saints organization as the lineup cards were being exchanged for the second game of the doubleheader. They did make the announcement so that the crowd at CHS Field could give them a nice little ovation. So I thought that was a nice touch.
That's awesome. We had, continuing on with Kansas City, two guys are signed by affiliate clubs. Not a surprise that happens from Kansas City. Jordan George was with the team for one game before being signed, and Brian Ellington has his contract purchased by the Seattle Mariners. Just another great example of Joe Calfapietra getting some guys back to affiliate ball.
Right, and it only took one game for George to get signed by the Kansas City Royals. So, first all their scout had to do if he was local was just scoot across town to watch him. Went 2 for 5 in one game, and that was enough to get him on the Royals' radar. Ellington.
Go ahead.
Ellington, I thought, was just a matter of time, too. He was the one guy in their pen that's consistently throwing strikes, and he's the first guy I've ever seen pop 100 on the CHS field radar gun. On Saturday night, I think he topped out at 101. So you just had to know that someone's going to sign him.
Wow, 101. Wow. We move to the Sioux Falls Canaries. Obviously a huge loss when Taylor Hill signs to go down and play in Mexico. They bring in Tyler Heron, a guy who's been in the American Association before. But right now I'm kind of looking at this team and I'm thinking the hitting is really performing right now, but that performance is just being wasted because this pitching staff is just really struggling right now.
Right, and there just doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to what they're doing out there, because I just think at this point Mike Myers is trying to find anybody that can go out and get some outs. Yeah, like the game in Kansas City last night where he was handing the ball to Will Solomon for a save, and I don't think Solomon has ever been acknowledged as a closer in this league. So, but they've been using the close, had an ERA around 6, so it's just been really real tough goal for Mike Meyer and his pitching staff.
Yeah, Sam Bragg has great stuff, but has just not been able to be consistent enough for Mike to be able to depend on him, and it's kind of disappointing for them because they've had a lot of late games. I mean, this team has probably lost 6 or 7 games in the last 3 weeks that they were leading after the 8th or after the 7th, and it's, I know as a starting pitcher, you got to be thinking, man, I hope I can get 9 out of myself because I don't think these guys can hold a lead for me.
Right, and hope that what's the saying goes in the starting pitcher, goes to the locker room and tells his offense, get me 13 tonight. That seems to be what's been going on with the Canaries.
See, looking at the Sioux Falls Canaries right at the moment, so they have lost just 3 games after leading after 7 innings. I thought that would be even more, but you know, they've let some stuff get away from them of late. But
team ERA for the year of 5.55. That's just not going to cut it.
No, I'm pretty surprising too. I know that they had quite a good group out there, but they just have not been able to put it together.
Yeah, the top ERA guy right now for guys that are still around is Luis Pollo Reyna with 4.10. And even he's had to step in and start games, pitch in the middle, pitch late, just wherever they can find them, find a spot for them.
Yeah, I think 14 guys have made starts for them this season. So we did want to comment on Mitch Glasser returning from Team Israel. I did hear that they advanced to the European qualifying tournament, which will occur in September. So congratulations to Mitch. Moving on to the Lincoln Salt Dogs. We were talking about the last couple of weeks, Kevin, about this was going to be the opportunity of whether Lincoln was going to stay in the race or not, and I think it's time to start throwing dirt on them.
Right, that's just not happening. They finally broke a long losing streak, but it just hasn't equated to any sort of a run that's going to get them back in the division. And let's face it, such as Kansas City can hit and pitch, it's just going to be a two-dog race with Cleburne and Sioux City, and I just don't see Lincoln having enough in the tank to try to get back in it.
You know, Kevin, coming into the season, I had picked Lincoln to finish in fifth. It was not that I didn't think that this team had a lot of talent, because they do. I just thought that the level of talent above them was going to be too much for them to overcome. And I don't look at that as a fault of Bobby Brown in any way. It's just that he was facing with the circumstance of Josh Robertson coming to Cleburne, and we know that Steve Montgomery has built great teams. We saw what Joe Calfa-Pietra could do in Kansas City last season, and Mike Meyer looked like he had put together a really quality team in Sioux Falls, and so it just looked like this was kind of the odd team out at this particular point. But I look at this, and I'm kind of hearing stuff going on around the league right now, and I'm thinking, I wonder if Bobby Brown survives the season out here, which is really unfair to him, but it seems that ownership, from things I'm hearing, are disappointed in his performance, which I don't know really know if that's justified, but it doesn't matter when they're the owners. Should Bobby Brown be concerned about his job, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. Probably that leads to is, does it become a situation where he feels like he's got to finish strong to save his job? And I'm sure it's a natural instinct to think about your own job security as opposed to the future of the franchise, which if you're looking at more of a long-term view, you got a guy like guys in the your staff like Austin Boyle, Brownell, and Kyle Kinman who could fetch you some pretty good return on the trade market, but you know, why would Brown want to make deals when he knows that he likely wouldn't be around to reap the benefits of it?
That's a very good point. And he does have a shot to make kind of a little bit of a run down the stretch, because the last 2 weeks of the season this team goes to Texas for three, then goes to Kansas City for four, then welcomes Gary for three, goes to has Cleburne in for four, and then goes to Gary for three more. So they have a chance to maybe win 12 or 13 of those games, and maybe at least 10, and kind of maybe that would save his job.
Yeah, it's I just wonder if they're going to be in any kind of range to make a run by them. But yeah, it'll look better on the overall ledger, but I just don't think it's going to make them a factor in the South race.
Well, Kevin, let's talk about big series that are coming up this weekend and into next week. It's a big battle in the North this weekend as Winnipeg goes to Fargo, St. Paul goes to Chicago. Each one of those series has huge playoff implications right now, and it's got to be a playoff atmosphere for each one of those teams heading into this weekend. So what are some keys, if you look at those right now? What are some things, what's the big storylines you're looking out of that, or some keys that you look at in those series?
I look at it as St. Paul in their series with Chicago. St. Paul's got to get their offense back on track. Hopefully last night for them was a good sign getting 8 runs against a former major league pitcher in Howells. But they're going to have to score runs in Chicago, or else the pitching staff's going to have to step up and shut down a pretty potent Dogs lineup. In Fargo, same case, Winnipeg's pitching's going to have to find a way to keep the Fargo bats at check if the Coyotes going to come out there with a couple of victories. So pitching will be the key, because there's, you know, you look at it, if St. Paul's on all four of those teams can put a hurt on you if your pitching's not up to par.
It's kind of interesting because you have a St. Paul team that is not hitting very well right now and a Chicago team, Dogs team, that is really struggling to get guys out. So Chicago's got to be thinking maybe this is our, what the doctor ordered for our pitching staff, and St. Paul's probably thinking, hey, this is what we're looking for our hitters. So that should be an interesting scenario. Coming out of the weekend, Kevin, the two big series next week are Kansas City heading to Cleburne and St. Paul going against Sioux City. So again, Kansas City trying to, get above 500 and really make some kind of a run to get themselves a shot against the top team in the division. And Sioux City could be 16-0 at that point in their last 16 games heading into the game. So, into that series, excuse me. So, those are two exciting series.
I think that's Kansas City hosting Cleburne.
Kansas City, yes, you're right. I'm sorry. Kansas City hosting Cleburne. My apologies. You're correct.
So that might be the T-Bone's last stand, so to speak.
That's
Boy,
a good possibility.
if you sweep Cleburne somehow in that 3-game series, you're right back in it again. But
And if
like
you
you said, Sioux City, the way they're playing against, and then the lower rung teams, you're looking at them rattling off another sweep too. So let's say even if Kansas City gets 2 out of 3 against Cleburne, Sioux City runs the table at Sioux Falls, you're looking at a flip-flop for your first, second place teams. So if the Cleburne's a 27 Yankees, I don't know what the heck we're going to call Sioux City if they pass them up.
No, you know what? I was not wrong. It is Kansas City at Cleburne next week. I'm looking here at this.
Okay, maybe I'm okay.
No, my no, I
Yeah,
no,
maybe
it
I'm
is
a
Kansas
week
City at
ahead
Cleburne. So
here.
that's a real that's a big series for Kansas City because they got to win at least they probably got to seriously be thinking about sweeping in Cleburne. But you got to take 2 out of 3 for sure.
Right. Yeah, I guess I was a week ahead of looking at the schedule here.
Okay, I don't feel
Yeah,
bad
I'm still same scenario for Kansas City. Yeah, you almost have to look at find a way to run the table. 2 out of 3 only gains you 1 game. The sweep gains you 3. So, as they say in the NHL, it's like a 4-point game every night.
The one thing I do question about Sioux City, as hot as they've been and as well as they are playing in their own division, I wonder if they have to make a statement in that St. Paul series about being able to beat North Division teams because they've just not played well against teams from the North this season. So is the, do you feel like there is not beyond incentive that there's kind of a, hey, we gotta win at least 2 or 3 of these games to prove that we are a team that can compete against teams in the North?
I think so, and then they gotta look at it too, that St. Paul are gonna be on like their third leg of a 3-city road trip, so they have to look at it like, well, maybe we're gonna catch St. Paul, be a little tired from the road. And I think they do, they have to remember, St. Paul made them look pretty bad early in the season when Sioux City was down, so I'm sure they're looking for revenge.
Well, now we head to the most important point of the show, the Kevin Lukow power rankings. So, Kevin, drum roll. I wish I had a drum roll. Well, who do we got?
All right, the power rankings are brought to you by Denny's. Denny's, the home of cinnamon crumb pancakes and conveniently located half a mile from the General Mitchell International Airport in Milwaukee.
Good location.
Yes, within walking distance. Number 12 this week are the Texas Air Hogs. Number 11, Milwaukee Milkmen. Number 10 are the Lincoln Salt Dogs. Number 9, Gary South Shore Railcats. Number 8, Sioux Falls Canaries. Number 7, Kansas City T-Bones. Number 6 are the Chicago Dogs. Number 5, Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Number 4, Fargo Moorhead. The 3 team is St. Paul, and they follow the Cleburne Railroaders, who are down to the number 2 spot, and your new number 1 team are the Sioux Falls or Sioux City Explorers.
Wow, Fargo with the top record in the league drops to number 4. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
It was by my the way I do it, it was a 3-way tie between Cleburne, St. Paul, and Fargo, but then I look at it like St. Paul just recently swept Fargo, and Cleburne just recently swept St. Paul, so that's You know, it's kind of one of those if A is greater than B and B is greater than C type of deals.
I like it. I like it a lot. That's good thinking right there. And adding algebra. So that's always a good thing, I think, there too. That's the theorem of transitional equality or something like that. I think if I remember that correctly. So
you just said about anything there. And it's that's what it was.
What's going on in the 10th inning stretch, Kevin?
Well, we're, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I'm in Milwaukee this week, and I will be given a review of routine field coming up in the upcoming blog, which I will be working on Sunday. I will have a recap of a very important St. Paul Saints week, and course news and notes as necessitated from the American Association, plus I will have updated power rankings.
That's the kind of thing we like to hear. I think I meant to say the transitive property. Let me see if I got to look it up now because I feel like I said something almost right, but I didn't. So I got to see,
Whoa.
It the transitive property? Yeah, it is transitive property. There we go. Okay, so awesome.
you remind me of a story. When I was in high school, there was an algebra class that my friends were in, and there was a teacher asked some kind of question, and this gal just stuck and yelled, "Transitive!" And that was her nickname. The rest of the year was Transitive.
That's kind of interesting. Transitive is the nickname. And Minor League Sports Report, we're still just keeping you up to date on what's going on around the league out there. And that will be, actually, by the time the show is posted out there, there will also be new manager podcast shows that you can go out and check out. So go out and enjoy the shows out there. And Kevin, do we have a final thought for this week?
You know, just some... my initial thoughts of routine field, it's, you know, you go from a place with 8,000 people a night in a crowded lower town area, you know, just bustling, everything's going on, and then I come to routine field. Now, don't get me wrong, this isn't going to be a criticism. I know it doesn't sound good so far, but 1,100 people, it's kind of out in the suburbs. You look out and, you know, you don't see the skyline. You don't see a busy freeway. You just kind of see, like, area where there's youth baseball going on. Not much going on behind the ballpark. And in a way, it was kind of tranquil, kind of laid back. It was a different sort of baseball experience. But, yeah, you like to see more people at the games in Milwaukee, and I think that's going to happen in time as the team has a full year of marketing and a way to work out some of the kinks and get some development around the ballpark. But, you know, some people are saying, well, it's a real, real basic ballpark, but you know what? Sometimes that's not a bad thing. So, if people are in the Milwaukee area and happen to be listening, well, obviously you're probably already Milkman fans, but get your family, get your friends out to the games, and let's get that ballpark filled up because it's a nice, relaxing experience checking out Milkman Baseball. So get out to the park.
I couldn't agree more. And I do want to say that some of us actually do like going to baseball games to watch baseball. So, you know, if the stadium is a traditional baseball stadium, I have no complaint about that whatsoever because that's good stuff to me. Some teams have really gotten crazy with the kind of foods they serve you, and I'm not interested in sushi and whatever else they come up with there. There's nothing wrong with a hot dog.
The prices seem reasonable on concessions there, and it was more of a basic menu as opposed to, you know, you're not going to go there. It's not going to be like Seattle where they're having fried grasshoppers or some places where you can actually have sushi. It was just a traditional baseball experience, and sometimes that's not a bad thing. It's nice to get away from the hustle and bustle.
Well, you know, if they have some good hot dogs there, you know who might be willing to make a trip up from Chicago?
Oh, I can't forget Charlie, even though I haven't heard from him in quite a while now.
He might want to make a trip up there to catch up Milwaukee hot dog. So I didn't see him in Chicago the two times I was there last year for games and for the dogs. I thought that'd be kind of an instant lure for him. So
Yeah,
kind
well,
of
you know, you
disappointing.
can't beat a hot dog at the ballpark.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, we want to thank you for joining us this week. For Kevin Lucco, I am Rob Pannear, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.